Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Wednesday, the 9th of July. Let me introduce our panel members to you. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joseph. Thanks for your leadership.
It is a pleasure to be under your command. newsman Ray Graff is here.
Hello.
Libby Post is a political consultant.
Hi.
I'm a dork.
Why? Why is that?
No, Libby called me a dork earlier.
Oh.
Yeah. But that's all right.
But only in love.
Hey, only in love. Oh, I know. Right. I know. Nice. No. Right. It's good.
Let's not tell them why, though.
No, no, I won't. Okay, fine. I won't. It has to do with my fashion choices. Mm. Everything's fine.
And I'm the one to make any kind of statements about that.
No, I think you present yourself very well.
Oh, Lynn. Thank you, dear.
Okay.
You ready to go, Ray?
Lynn begs to
if we have to, sure.
All right, let's go. Democrats in Congress said Tuesday that they had developed legislation to override the Supreme Court decision on contraceptives. The bill would ensure that women had access to insurance coverage for birth control, even if they worked for businesses that had religious objections. The bill, put together in consultation with the Obama administration, would require for-profit corporations like Hobby Lobby stores to provide and pay for contraceptive coverage, along with other preventive health services under the Affordable Care Act. The measure could be on the Senate floor as early as next week. According to Democrats, but House Democrats are developing a companion bill, but it faces long odds in the House, which is controlled by Republicans, of course, and especially when you have the Speaker of the House saying that the Hobby Lobby decision was a victory for religious freedom.
Yes, it's a brilliant political strategy on the part of the Democrats. That's what it is, because every poll shows that women want this right. They want reproductive rights. They want the ability to control their own bodies, and they hate this decision. Now, we know it's not going to pass in the House. But what it's going to do is put every one of those guys on notice that this is a crucial vote for them.
So it's on the record before
That's
the elections.
Right. Correct. That's right. Now, the problem, of course, is that Boehner is never going to allow it to come to the floor, because that's what always happens. And the Democrats will scream up or down, vote, 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 up or down. And every one of the people who are running on the Democratic side against entrenched Republicans will use this against them. So that's what I think is going on here. And of course, the same thing is true in the Senate. So now people who used to say, okay, I better go with the Tea Party because, you know, I'll get a primary otherwise, will realize that they are between a rock and a hard place.
So this is really about keeping the Senate? Then, in other words, it will come to the floor and before a vote.
Yes. Oh, of course.
So this is about the Democrats keeping the Senate?
No, I think it's about both. I mean, I think it's about both. Look, there is an Obama strategy. We looked in the last election. He won. He won big. Why? Because, A, he had women on his side, overwhelmingly women on his side, and Hispanics. So you can continue to see that Obama, being a very good politician and the people who surround him, will make this a clarion call to women and on other issues to Hispanics. Yesterday, I'm sure I'm jumping the gun on this, Joe, but yesterday he comes up with, I want $3 billion from Congress. $3 billion from Congress to stop the flood of people coming right over the side. Well, what's that all about?
Right.
That's all about the fact that, okay, Republicans, you're always saying we don't do enough. Here it is. Now, you know you're not going to give it to us. You never give us what we want. And so we're asking you for $3 billion. You're not going to give us $3 billion because that would be a victory for our side. So, therefore, you're between another rock and a hard place on this very issue. And they're positioning the whole election, including the Congress and the presidency, on this.
What's interesting is yes, this is to preserve the Senate and to maybe pick up some more seats in the House. I don't think the Democrats will take back the House. But There's more fallout happening, and we saw it from the decision. The in major gay groups yesterday, the task force, ACLU, Lambda Legal, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, they're all pulling their support from the civil rights bill, from the
ENDA,
the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, because it has the religious exemption in it, and there and as part of that, also, the president is ready to sign an executive order banning discrimination against LGBT people in federal contracts. But and people are pushing him to make sure there's not a religious exemption. So the community is really, you know, one of the part of the fallout, as it were, if it's negative or not, is that the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community is starting to organize around this and pushing this issue of religious exemption and what it really means in terms of allowing religious organizations to discriminate. And it's the same thing. We're allowing corporations based on their religious positions to discriminate. So it's people said this is a slippery slope. I think it's like the thing in the water, the drop in the water, and the waves just
the ripples,
the concentric waves are just going to be massive.
So let me get this right on ENDA, because basically it's private. They're worried about private companies citing the objections that were upheld by the Supreme Court.
Sure. Right. It used to be just the religious exemption was just about from churches and nonprofits who were religious organizations. Now, anybody could take it.
So, Ray, do you have any questions about this?
No, I'm looking at the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993.
Yes.
And so this is where...
Have that in your pocket, do you?
No, but this is where from where it stems, all of this. Right. So the law says... The government shall not burden a person's exercise of religion unless the burden is the least restrictive means to advance a compelling government interest.
Right. So the question is it a compelling government interest to allow women to have poor women to have contraception? Yes, am I wrong about that? Isn't that what it comes down to? Is it a compelling governmental interest? I think it is.
To make sure women have access?
Yes.
Absolutely. It's a compelling governmental interest.
What do you think, Ray?
Well, how would you argue that? In other words, if you were in front of the Supreme Court, how would you say that is a there's a compelling federal government reason for that?
Well, I would argue that women have a right to control their own bodies, and poor women are right there with them, and that otherwise, if these health care plans don't assure that right, then they're out of luck.
So help me out on this.
Yes, sure.
Because this is why... But I'm dense and I don't get this.
Not at all. You're dense.
No, I don't get it. So you just said all the polls show.
Yeah.
So why keep banging this drum if you know that it's enough of a deterrent for people?
Because you have five guys sitting on the Supreme Court of the United States who don't practice the same politics that the guys in Congress have. They have brought this down upon the Republican Party, those five people, because they really believe
it. But then why embrace it? Like, if you're John Boehner and say that this is a victory for religious freedom.
Yeah, because he's worried about the Tea Party. And you see the brilliance of the Obama approach here and the Democratic approach is that they are going to say, Boehner and group, you can worry about a primary opponent or you can worry about being defeated in the election.
Right. So it seems to me, and again, I'm not overly clear on this, but it seems to me, just anecdotally, that in the past, there have been times where the Democratic Party in particular has been extremely reticent to use this as an issue. To come out and say and to use abortion and to use women's rights, to use gay rights as an issue to win an election. Do you see that changing where they can come out and say, look, this is the party that is going to be more inclusive. This is what more people say. And we're more on your side and go for those social issues as opposed to other issues.
Well, yes, because what happens is that you're right. There are times that these issues become problematic for Democrats, especially in districts that have been organized through the use of the gerrymander for Republicans. Mm-hmm. And so they stay away from them. But every once in a while, under the law of unanticipated consequences,
right,
something comes along. The court makes a ruling which is antithetical to the way that women in the United States are thinking. And then the polling shows, hey, maybe we should go here. It was brought to them. I don't think I'm not sure you're wrong about this. But in this case, they take a look. They hold their hand up in the wind. They see the way the wind is blowing. They think politically this can bring some benefits, and they do it. And also, by the way, they happen to think it's right.
Ray Graff.
On one hand, you could certainly say this is the way democracy is supposed to work. In other words, the Supreme Court strikes down a law that those in Congress say, well, we think that was a bad decision. We will make a new law. The other side might say this is an extremely cynical use of the people's time in Congress by drafting a law that has already been struck down by a duly constituted Supreme Court for purely political reasons. So, on the one hand, democracy, this is what you're supposed to do. If there's a buffer zone ruling in Massachusetts that's struck down, then Deval Patrick and the legislature says, we're going to draft another one that we think fits in with this decision. On the other hand, if this is basically the same rule that has already been struck down, then is that a waste of the people's time when really you're just trying to make a wedge issue for the 2014 elections?
Well, you say you're just trying to make a wedge issue.
No, I'm asking that question.
Oh, you're asking. Well, sometimes when you ask, it sounds like you're saying, but I'll let that.
I'm giving you both sides of the argument. Now you parse it.
Well, yeah. Okay. But here's my parse. I think that the Supreme Court did what it thought from its ultra conservative point of view, they thought was right. They did that. And then the Democrats came along and said, we think what you did was wrong, but we can also make some hay here.
I think that social issues do play within the electorate. And we saw how marriage, as an example, was used in 2000 and 2004. Sure. You can't use it anymore. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Campaigning against women, and there is a war on women from the Republican Party in this country. There's no two ways about it. Campaigning against a woman's right to choose, restricting access to contraception. As Alan said, the polls are showing women want this, but it's not going to play well.
Including Catholic women,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah. The majority of Catholic women want to be able to use contraception. It's not going to play well in November, and women are going to come out. We have to remember, women gave the edge to Obama's election.
Exactly.
They've been giving the edge to a number of elections, and women recognizing that they have some power in one place, and that's the election booth. And they can go in, or the polling booth, they can go in and they can vote their conscience and they can vote what's right for them. And I think we're going to see more of that. Now, whether or not this really comes out on the other end and that we're going to take back the House, I hope that's true. I think what this will do is save the Senate, and we'll be able to pick up some more seats in the House because of this. You know, there's other things going on. You know, I keep seeing
these.
When
you say we, you mean as you're a Democrat?
Yes, oh, yeah, yes, okay. Yes. But we, as in the Democratic Party. Mm. And I think... There's other things that are coming out that people are starting to talk about in terms of this case, in terms of the rights of the folks being detained at Guantanamo Bay and whether or not their religious rights are being abridged. You know, so there's all kinds of this is a very slippery slope, and there's all kinds of issues that are going to come out from this. And I think in the long run, these five justices might realize they did something that's much more dangerous to the fabric of our democracy than
what's
they
dangerous
think.
About them is they don't care.
Well, that's true too, but you know,
we're gonna take a quick break in just a moment. Dickie Jones died.
Who? Oh.
Dickie Jones. Actor Dickie Jones,
87
years old.
I don't know who that is.
Best known, he was on 100 films. He played a kid cowboy, but he was best known as the voice of Pinocchio.
I'll be darned.
87 years old.
Gee, Geppetto.
Right. There you go. You
know, maybe you can get that gig.
Apparently there's an opening. Yeah, go for that. Okay. We're going to come back. We're going to go to letters, and we will talk about other topics. And we welcome your input, as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Yeah. That was
trombone
good.
Music.
Trombone music. Your son Raymond plays the trombone.
Yes, we all do in the Graff family.
Yeah,
you know.
Sure.
Yeah. You all play.
There are three of us. Three of us who play. Yes, and more to come.
Okay.
Soon it'll be an octet.
Mordecai.
All right, we have
seven.
We have some letters.
We have a lot of letters.
Okay, I'm just going to read one of them.
Okay, please. You do it.
Which
better.
Is no, it's just from Bonnie who says. You have a habit of lowering your voice at sentence endings, and thus I missed who he was the voice of. Pinocchio.
I didn't think you lowered your voice when you said Pinocchio.
Well,
in fact,
Libby
came right in and did the voice.
I read this for two reasons. One is because it was a letter written to us. Two, because I hope my wife is listening to this and smiles, who always says that I lower my voice at the end of sentences and I mumble and she can't understand.
On the air or at home?
No, just at home.
At home.
Yeah.
So. Well, you know what you need is a 6-to-1 compressor at your house.
Right.
It'll just level everything out, talking to them. Well, honey, can I have some more tea?
There are reasons to do it. I mean, I wrote a column once in my Eagle column about the art of speaking under one's voice.
Yeah,
right.
You know, the art of doing that. Mm-hmm. So
you're good at it. You're very good at it.
You certainly have. You have perfected
your
that art.
Doctorate.
I would say yes.
And Raymond isn't.
And
by the way, Raymond isn't bad at it either.
No, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good at it.
All right. So a lot of letters that actually have to do with the subjects we discussed.
Okay. Fine.
Okay. Now I got a letter criticizing me for. Going too fast on the letters from a letter from somebody who wrote a letter.
Yeah.
Of course. Okay. this is from Cynthia. Hobby lobby decision.
Oh, boy.
Okay. 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 All right.
Now it's going to be like dictating to a stonecutter.
I had a letter to the editor on this very subject published in the Schenectady Gazette 2 days ago. My opening sentence read, well, in one fell swoop, the Supreme Court, in their usual 5-4 decision in the Hobby Lobby case by the all-male, and it says here, Vatican V, yes, they're all Catholic, managed to please far-right fundamentalists, the Catholic bishops, and corporations. I think that says it all. It was indeed a poor decision, and that's from Cynthia. Letter writers, proceed at your own risk. These are not endorsed by WAMC or its managers.
And we only have so much time in the 50 minutes
and
or
especially
whatever.
Especially if you read slowly, the show will be over.
Okay,
so.
Okay.
Speed it up.
And this is from Tony. Can you please be honest? Nothing but your rhetoric is denying reproductive right anything in women. To women. The decision is about insurance paying for it. I have no objection to women's choice, and the extreme polarization only adds to incivility. The topic of legislative solutions to court decisions is valid. The perversion of facts dishonest, as are your assumptions about what is in the minds of others. War on women is as damaging to honest and civil debate as anything can be, and that's from Tony.
And he can't get pregnant, so.
Tony might be a she.
No, it was a Y. Not
okay.
An I.
Right.
Okay. And from Dick, enjoyed your. Oh, I have no idea. Enjoyed your cameo on Letterman last night. Anybody get that?
Oh, yeah.
What's that?
It was at a recent taping, and there was a shot of me. I think
really?
On Letterman last night. Yeah.
Whoa! I would have tuned in for that.
Yeah. I'll show it to you later.
I'll be darned.
He would have tuned in.
Your second appearance on Letterman.
This is from Unsigned. Alan, just listening to the debate over Hobby Lobby's Supreme Court decision. By the way, I go faster when they're too long. Please make it clear that this decision does not eliminate women's access to birth control options, but rather whether or not the company ownership chooses to provide this coverage in their company's subsidized health insurance plans. To that end, corporate insurance plans have always decided what and how much coverage will be provided in plans they subsidize. Okay, I'm not going to read the rest of it because it goes on too long, but you get the,
it's a valid point.
You get the point.
Well,
it's a point.
Can they pick and choose and say, oh, I'll cover your appendectomy, but I won't cover your breast cancer surgery?
I think health insurance does things like that. Perhaps not in that radical of a decision, but certainly they do.
There's basic... There are reproductive health is a basic right. And what this decision does is take that basic right away from women.
But it is free.
Because it's covering Viagra, so you can get a woman pregnant and they'll pay for that, but they won't pay for contraception.
But free contraception is a basic human right?
I think so.
I think so.
I see. Okay.
You see. When Ray says, I see, like that, that's a
I
Michael.
Think absolutely.
That's my friend Michael. That's, he's
contraception. And it's good for it's a societal imperative. It's one of those things that women need to be able to control their bodies. And to say, oh, go out and pay for it. Well, you know what? The majority of these women who work for Hobby Lobby, who work for these big box stores, are poor women who need this insurance coverage because they can't go out based on how much they get paid and pay for this stuff themselves. It's just that simple.
I mean, okay. An argument could be made that, you know, I want to go buy condoms. I'll buy condoms. Otherwise, maybe I don't have sex.
Well, that's one of the arguments that was raised yesterday, and I've been reading about this, Rush Limbaugh said, well, they should just not do that thing, because he couldn't bring himself in his misogynist way
maybe
to talk about sex.
Sex.
Right. Well, you know what? Okay, then how about you guys? How do you feel about that? All the women withhold sex from you because we might get pregnant. You're not going to be happy. You're not going to be happy.
I think you best move on.
And Kay, who is a... Did I do something?
No, just keep going.
No, okay. It was a very subtle one.
My blood is boiling. Go ahead.
And Kay says, we hear from her every once in a while, the case was decided on the basis of a law passed by Congress and not on a constitutional basis. So a legislative response is called for. Not to say that the Democrats aren't using the issue strategically.
Well, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
Okay, and I think, do you got anything else there, Joe?
I think we got them.
Okay, great.
Okay, but you know that idea. Let's just go back to this for a second.
Okay.
Just that idea of it is a bit. If I apologize for this, but a bit of an apples and oranges comparison between Viagra and contraceptives. Yes.
No.
Okay.
No. Viagra enables men to have sex, right?
And to have their libido increased.
Right.
And
to have sex to the expected end.
Right, and to sit
result.
In bathtubs outside and
right.
Which, by the way, is the best way to have sex in two separate bathtubs.
Right. So if Viagra enables men to have sex to its desired conclusion.
Yes.
Okay. And the women can't protect themselves from pregnancy from that desired conclusion. No, it's not apples and oranges. It's the same thing.
I agree
because,
with you, Libby.
Well, I agree with Libby, too. I'm just saying that but it's not something, it's not a preventative. You know what?
Sure, Viagra is not a preventative, but
the thing is,
they're not saying we're not going to cover contraception and we're not going to cover Viagra. We're covering Viagra.
Right.
But we're not going to cover contraception. But by the way, our investments are in companies, pharmaceutical companies, that manufacture IUDs and birth control.
So if we want to get a vasectomy, well, all of us.
Fine.
you get a group rate.
Let's just be cheap. Yeah.
The big V.
That.
All right, let's move on.
Right. And I don't have any of the equipment left anyway.
Right,
so
okay,
fine.
Yeah. So we go to that.
Vasectomy clinic in the sky.
Right. The insurance will pay for that.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you made a point earlier, Libby. I think you made this point about people who might say, okay, I'm religious too, but a religious in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that to us?
Sure. Somebody could say, you know, it's against my religion, whatever that religion might be, to hire men. Where would that leave us? Okay. It's against my religion to have men come to that desired conclusion when it comes to sex. So I'm not going to cover Viagra, and I'm not going to cover any kind of urological medical care for men because I don't believe my religion. And actually, there are some religions that don't believe in sex.
Yeah.
You know, it's against my religion, and so I'm not going to cover that. You know, this is they've opened up a can of worms that it's going to be very hard to
not
close.
Really, because what's going to happen is these five guys are going to say when that
Oops.
Case comes up, no, they're not going to say whoops. They're going to say no, there's a compelling governmental interest in making sure that men and women are treated correctly.
And they might even go as far as to say that that's not a real religion.
Well, by the way, well, we saw that in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, just this week. I wrote a whole column about it. Well, Arlo Guthrie has Arlo's Church, and he calls it the Bring Your Own God Church, right? So they went to the assessors, and they asked that he get an exemption from taxes, which he'd been paying all along mistakenly. And they said, well, you know, we're not so sure. There's a church. You got money from the federal, from the state government for the, for these good programs that you, you're putting on.
But
there.
If they're not for
and,
profit.
And they, and well, that's what ended up happening. See, when I started asking questions and wrote the column, they said, well, if you apply under your not-for-profit status, then you can get the thing, but not as a church.
Right.
But Arlo feels very strongly that it's a church, and it is a church.
Is he the Pope of the church?
No, no. On the contrary,
not everybody has a pope, you know.
Yeah,
really?
No,
yes.
But he is the guy who brought us the church, and it is quite some church. It's a real good church.
Hey, you know,
why are you making a face, Ray? You don't.
I'm not making a
face.
I'm just trying to take it all in.
No, you were making.
Keep talking, Daddy-O.
Okay.
Let's take a break. and then we'll there's a lot of letters about my mumbling. So that's good.
We'll be right back.
One was enough.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Now 10 minutes to go.
Support for WAMT comes from Tannery Pond Concerts, New Lebanon, New York, presenting the Jasper String Quartet playing Haydn, Shostakovich, and Dvorak this Saturday at 8 p.m., 888-820-1696. The Carey Institute of Ecosystem Studies, Millbrook, New York, showing Field Biologist, a documentary about a young researcher and his career in tropical bird conservation, July 25th, 7 p.m., careyinstitute.org. And Bread and Honey Bakery and Cafe, 809 Madison Avenue, Albany, New York. Baking artisan breads and bagels open Friday through Sunday during the month of July, 518-567-7158.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Libby Post, Ray Graff, and Alan Chartok. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org.
Go get them, Mumbles.
Okay, so Jack, J-A-C.
J-A-C.
Writes, as long as the issue of on-air voices is up, I endorse the previous concern about Joe's habit of tailing off in voice volume at the end of the sentences. If one is a little far from the radio, leaves the last couple of words lost in the ether. Well,
we
if you're out in the garden, you're not going
to
hear
we,
it.
That's we don't want you to be away from the radio.
No. Right. That's,
it might be a fault of their speaker frequency response.
Yes.
In other words, they're not hearing when you.
And Alan, in his attempts to get a letter read in the shortest time, very often slurs his parenthesis, the writer's words, in a way to obscure the writer's point.
Ah.
Not true.
No?
No, I don't.
We thought you were drunk.
Please strike a better balance between economy and communication. Thanks and love the first hour. So, S-O-O-O-O-O-O-O-O much. Jack from Olive Bridge. Okay. And then Joanne. First of all, we love you, Joe, and never want to miss a word you say. But sorry, Joe, your listener was right. I've often thought of writing to you about your habit of trailing off a sentence at a lower, almost an unintelligible level.
We're losing our freedoms as citizens, and this is what people are concerned about.
Suddenly
thanks
it's turned into a
listening
focus group.
Right.
Okay, and then Julius wrote, explain to me why Viagra should be free and not contraceptives. And you did that already.
That's right. I think we talked about
Julius
it.
Julius on the same page
right
with Libby.
Right, yeah. You were on the same page.
Julius is a good man.
Okay.
As opposed to a bad man.
Right. But who am I to say who's a good man and who's a bad man?
I'm someone to say.
Yeah, you're the you're the judge.
All right, next.
What's next?
Are we done with the letters?
Yes. Well, that's all I got.
Seven
minutes
right
to go.
7 minutes to go. Let me. Oh, Alan, we didn't get to this. So let's talk about the Brooklyn prosecutor
who limits
when he'll target marijuana. All right. So after months of resistance from the New York Police Department, the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office announced on Tuesday that it would immediately carry out its plan to stop prosecuting most low-level marijuana cases. The policy was proposed in a draft confidential memorandum in April, but was delayed as prosecutors and police officials tried to iron out their differences in meetings and phone calls.
I love it. You know, here in Albany, we had the Occupy Albany thing, and you remember the very courageous district attorney,
David Soares,
that we have here, said he wasn't going to prosecute them. Now, I think that ticked off, at least it was my impression, that ticked off the governor, because, you know, he wanted that done. District attorneys have tremendous amount of power, but here we have a governor coming out with a medical marijuana law, which says, okay, you can get medical marijuana, but you got to go to these particular places. You can't smoke it. And here comes the district attorney, knowing full well that people of color, people who are poor, smoke it on the street as opposed to the 16th floor of their Park Avenue apartment, and that it hurts them. And we know that our jails and our prisons have had a lot of drug people in them, and we're going a different way on that now. So the district attorney basically sets policy. But if you go across the river to Queens or perhaps to Manhattan, you might have a different outcome. The lesson you learn here is if you're going to smoke,
do it in Brooklyn.
Which is the hot place anyway.
Which should be a bumper sticker, really. Smoke it. It really is.
It's very hip and...
Can I ask the panel a question, a theoretical question here?
Mm-hmm. I just learned how to spell for shulgana.
Mm-hmm. Did you?
Yeah, good
for you. How do you spell it? F-E-R.
F-U-R-S-H-L-U-G-G-I-N-E-R.
I'll be darned.
That's not how I want to spell it. Go ahead.
So let me ask. Let me pose a question, a theoretical question to our panel. No. And in order to answer this question, you have to divorce the topic from the actual laws. In other words, you have to separate whether you agree or disagree with the laws in question.
Is this a question or an...
This is a question.
You pose everything as a question.
This is a question I would like to hear from you and Libby on this. Is it okay, from a societal standpoint, to have... You have some sheriffs who will not enforce the New York Safe Act. You have some district attorneys who will not enforce, for instance, the Occupy, would not prosecute, or in this case, the marijuana laws in Brooklyn. You have a president who would not, who said, the Justice Department will not go against the marijuana law, prosecute you, Colorado and Washington, for selling recreational marijuana and allowing it. From a societal standpoint, is this sort of civil disobedience
going rogue?
Is it okay? In other words, are you, by saying I will enforce selectively what I like, are you giving that message to the people who theoretically you govern that it's okay to just obey whatever you want?
First of all, this is nothing new.
But that's not the answer.
No. Wait a second.
I talked to a Supreme Court expert on this who said the same thing. They do this all the time, but that's not the answer.
You know, that was rude. You asked a long, run-on question, and then I started this speak, and you jumped down my throat and said that's not the answer.
That's not the answer.
You don't get to decide what the answer is.
I do, too.
I'm giving you the answer.
All right, go ahead.
We have 4 minutes.
Is it okay?
It is okay depending on what the subject is.
Right.
I mean, if the greater ill is that blacks and Hispanics and poor people are being picked on more than people who are smoking in the 16th floor of their Park Avenue apartment, he is correcting a societal wrong, and that's okay with me.
Even though there may be another law down the line, now that this precedent has been set by the president, sheriffs, DAs. Even though there might be a law down the line that you like that they say, well, we're not going to enforce that law.
That's why my answer was, although I hope I can get through my answer, is it depends. It depends, Raymond, as to whether or not the law is a silly law. In other words, some people don't enforce laws the same way. Let me give you an example. We had a pirate radio station that was playing their thing illegally on our thing. On our, but the law is seldom enforced because the FCC just doesn't have enough people. They came. They did a great job. They closed the guy down. He'll be back. The punishment is negligible. But, you know, not every law can be enforced.
I'm not buying.
I am so surprised.
Libby?
Well, I think that, you know, here's an example for me. And there's validity to what you're saying. When marriage is legalized, there are certain county clerks or marriage clerks who say they won't marry people because it's against their religious beliefs, which now, you know, the Supreme Court has just upheld. And I'm like, well, that's the law of the land. You have to do it. Okay. The SAFE Act was put into place to protect people. Okay. So I think the sheriffs do need to enforce it. What the DA in Brooklyn is trying to do is trying to take a more rational approach to the use of marijuana and the impact that it has, that these low-level crimes are having in sending more and more people of color, young people of color, to jail.
No, I get it.
And so when, as Alan said, when there's a social impact here that will be better for a social group in a sense. I mean, I get what you're saying. It's, you know, it's black and white in terms of enforcing the law. But what he's doing is, A, it'll be saving taxpayer dollars on cases that shouldn't be in the courts to begin with.
No, I get it. And that's why I said we have to separate ourselves from the actual laws in question. But who then becomes the arbiter of what is good and what is bad? Libby might like one thing that a district attorney doesn't enforce, but Libby might not like another thing. And so shouldn't the law be the law and then you change the law if it's not right?
Let's leave 30 seconds for Alan to...
Okay, here we go. From Kirk, dear roundtable participants, I'm not aware of any insurance that pays for Viagra, and that's the point of his thing. Carol says, hi, folks. As usual, I'm enjoying the morning spirited discussions. The discussion re Viagra versus birth control reminded me of the practice of the U.S. Navy when I was first married many years ago. The Navy husband could go and unilaterally decide to get a vasectomy, but his wife needed to get his permission to get her tubes tied. I wonder if that's still the same. And Penny says, Alan accepted. What is wrong with the men on the round table? Women's reproductive health is very important. It affects a woman's sex life and a woman's overall health and a woman's quality of life. It would seem to me that men benefit from this good care. It's common sense, for goodness sake. Reproductive health care benefits both sexes. It would do well for all men to read or reread Aristophanes, Lysistrata. And you remember what happened to Lysistrata.
All right. We're out of time. Thank you very much. Good night.